Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And before I talk about our wonderful guest, I want to give a quick plug to our subscription service with Apple Podcasts. So if you are somebody that listens to our podcast, you know, long term, or you're new, very much welcome and hello, then you can subscribe for a small monthly fee to get extra special versions of the show. So basically, they are ad free. And we have a post-episode chat with the guest where I certainly think it's often like the very best parts. And part of that is you get aware that you're behind a paywall and you get a little bit less inhibited. The guests say more. I share more about what's happening in my like day-to-day dating life that I maybe wouldn't want fully out on the internet. And it's a good time, and it's also a way to support the show continuing. So if you do listen on Apple Podcasts, you'll find the option to subscribe. It should be usually at the top of the page. And you would also get ad-free episodes of our other show, the mental health one, if you listen to that as well. So if you do give that a try, thank you in advance. And remember, you can try it for a month. So if you like it, binge all the episodes, you know, soak up the content. Maybe never come back again, but I hope you stick around. We're here every week. And now, talking about being here every week and having another wonderful guest, this person is actually only our second ever repeat guest on the show, having been... You look very shocked.
I'm impressed by that.
There you go. You earned it. I told you your episode was good before.
Oh, too sweet.
No, I'm not. Shut up. They'll think I've gone soft. All right. So to say more nice things about our guest, we previously did an episode fairly early on in season one. And I think it was when the show was really starting to like come together with the format, because it was an example of how many themes we can cover in an episode. So off the top of my head, we talked about like what happens if you make it awkward on a date by not picking up certain signals. We talked about sex. We talked about medication and how that can affect sex drive. We talked about cuddling. We talked about toxic masculinity. The shocked faces looking back at me continue. I said all these things. He got me to talk about sex.
We covered a lot, really. How long was that podcast? Like 4 days long. I mean, that is a lot to cover in a short amount of time.
Yeah, we did great. So we'll see if there's anything left to say. But it's a good episode. I think it's only like 40 minutes or something. Pretty short. Particularly if you're not a subscriber. So
find out. If you subscribe now, then you'll find out and you'll see that I'm doing this topless. I don't know if that would be a benefit for people. I feel like you need to judge it up for the subscription service. Maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe introduce like there's a little raffle and someone gets a pair of your pants or something.
These all seem like first thoughts that maybe we would need to run some kind of survey on before committing to. So to finish off already a messy intro, our guest this week is a wonderful comedian, a mental health campaigner, an author, a good friend of mine. And I know this because I did get a text from you on Christmas Day, and only friends, family, and the exes you never want to hear again from text you on Christmas Day. And so please welcome to your ears, Dave Chawner.
Hello, thank you so much. I want to kick off initially by saying, what exes do you hear from on Christmas Day? Are we allowed to dig into that? Who do you get a text from in ex-wise? Do you get a lot?
Yeah. You know what? It's not even... So Christmas Day is definitely one. I find that the days after, like that dead patch in between Christmas and New Year, it's what I call the lost days, when everyone's reassessing their whole life. Seemingly, they look back and they're like, why am I not with Bob's? And I have the answers, but I don't really want to have the conversation again.
Sounds great. I want to spend Christmas with your family.
It's actually surprisingly chill. I wouldn't say that we're particularly chill as a family. I wouldn't say I'm particularly chill. But no, it's actually a really nice time of year. So me and my friend Nina, who the listeners will have heard about on another episode, we compare notes. That's a thing we've started doing at Christmas, of like, oh, who's texted you this year?
That's amazing. Well, you know what about Christmas kind of leads us nicely on to relationships. I think you can get very competitive with having the best Christmas, etc., etc. And as someone who has been with my partner now for 6 years, I have never spent a single Christmas with her. And people find that amazing. And I kind of, we like get really insecure. They're like, you know, are we not as good a relationship? Are we not as good a couple as, you know, Keith and Sarah or whatever? And it is so odd that you do get that Christmas competitiveness.
Yeah, I know. And particularly when you'd hope that's when it stops, because there can be so much pressure to be in a relationship at that time of year anyway, whether it's like family pressures, whether it's just like part of the commercialization of Christmas and all the rom-coms and everything. You know, that's a surprisingly big factor in cuffing season. And yeah, and so you'd sort of hope that, okay, you're in a relationship and that's ticked, but no, then it's like, how good is your relationship? How many baubles do you have on your tree?
I mean, ours, we actually nicked some baubles this year. I probably shouldn't admit to that. But we like, it's weird though, because I think that's a really good point. Because I always used to think that being in a relationship was kind of essentially like getting your GCSEs or A-levels, that you kind of get it, then it's not going anywhere. And then you use that to, like, you know, go on, do different things. But I think it's more like, almost like more like passing your driving test. You know, you're kind of given this license, but they can also be taken away, and you can have a few crashes along the way. And a lot of the time you can also become worse at it over time because you don't work at it as hard. It's a weird thing, that idea of sustaining a relationship.
Yeah. And the amount of work, like it's said so many times, particularly I hear it a lot with marriage, of like, marriage is work. You know, you've got to get up every day and remind yourself why you're in it and put the effort in. And
who's told you this? Your parents.
No, okay, I may be phrasing it harsher than that's actually been said to me. But you do hear a lot from people that marriage is work, right? And it's like this kind of warning, because it seemingly the warning does not get through, because there is this mentality that you're in it, and then it's like, tick, we signed the forms, you are legally bound to me.
Well, we all know that there's a money-back guarantee 30-day policy on the anything. Like, you know, you don't have to be a business guru to know that. I think, though, that I'm at an age now, because I'm getting old and being old, that, like, actually a lot of my friends are getting married, and there is a genuine pressure. Me and my partner have always said that we're not going to get married, but there is quite a pressure from other friends. It's a lurking, unasked question of, why aren't you? And people instantly assume, what's really interesting is that it's me dragging my feet, because that's always the old trope, isn't it? That the woman desperately wants to get married, but the bloke doesn't. Whereas actually in our relationship, it's absolutely vice versa, the other way around. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not desperate, but I was always the one. I always thought I'd kind of get married, whereas Una's like, meh. And she's very, I mean, she doesn't like the kind of personality, she doesn't like the institution of marriage. She wouldn't take my name, I wouldn't take her name, because Una's a really weird name for a bloke. And we just kind of like, so I said, well, why are we doing this? And honestly, Bobby, this is what's so pathetic, is we had a conversation the other day. We're like, yeah, we probably better like just go down to like the local registry office and do it, just for like, if one of us gets it by a bus, then, you know, it's easier on the paperwork, isn't it? And you're like, that's what we've become. Welcome to modern love.
And yet there's something for me anyway, sort of beautiful about doing it your own way. And like taking pride and joy in that, and make, you know, making it what it is, you know, not pretending it's going to be the day that your whole life needs to revolve around. And I am reminded of like a mate of mine, his parents got married, I think, a year or two ago. And so him and his sister are both grown ups. And so their parents just were never married. It was never something they like felt this huge need to do. They, I guess, resisted a lot of the pressures that they maybe felt from other couples. And they got to a point where they're like, okay, well, yeah, we're starting to think about like the future, and certain things will be easier for when we're no longer here, or certain things are easier in terms of like the just general kind of legal ramifications and taxes and stuff like that. And it feels like, okay, we've got some time. Let's do this. And, you know, and also they wanted to do it because to sort of celebrate how long they've been together. And I thought that was really nice and seems like such a lovely opposite to, I guess, one of the tropes we might think of as a bad marriage, which is people rushing into it and it very much crashing and burning very soon. You know, they feel like such the opposite of that, where they were like, oh, we really tried out being together and we want to celebrate that by taking this next step, even though so much time has passed that people have stopped nagging us about it. And so they went down to a registry office and they hired, I think, a guitar player to be waiting outside when they came out. And it was just the two of them and their son and their daughter. And the son wore a matching outfit to the dad. The daughter wore a white dress similar to her mum's. And the photos are beautiful and there were no guests. And I just like, they were the witnesses to their own parents' wedding. And I'm just like, that is so pure, because that is not any of the stereotypes. That's absolutely their love and their family. And they were the only people that needed to be there for that really intimate thing that we all got to see wonderful photos of on Instagram.
Downside, less wedding presents. I mean, that's my only thing on that. You don't get people buying you drinks and wedding presents. But I think that's genuinely lovely. And when you think about it, it's kind of mad that anybody stayed together. Because I, like, when I was at university, I had like the largest Christian union in the country. And so it was quite commonplace when people were 19 and 20 to get married. And I'll never forget, there was the third person in my seminar to get married. And I went like, God, like, well young to get married, like 19. And I will never forget the answer that always came up was, Christian though, innit? So people were getting married because they couldn't have sex before marriage. So they were just getting married to like get their end away. And I was like, that's not a good recipe.
What uni was this?
So University of Southampton. Very weird. Big Christian union. They had, I didn't realize how kind of Christian-y it was, but loads of people were getting married. Loads of people were, you know, sort of, but yeah, sex before marriage, no. And it kind of made a really weird sort of dynamic, because I feel like a lot of people sped up that process to get wedded because they did, you know, they essentially wanted to get their end away. And I just think, because that's how it was for a long time. And I'm like, that is such a, because I think sex is overblown anyway. I mean, it's a nice way to spend 3 minutes, but it's not like, you know, it's not mental. It's not like, it's not something worth ruining your family, deceiving your friends, going to jail for. And yet people do and have and will continue to, where it's like, popping something in a hot, it's essentially rubbing bits together, you know, like don't do it. And certainly don't get married just because you want that.
There you go. Last of the great romantics, Dave Chorn.
You know what? I think I always used to be quite a romantic, but being in a relationship has killed my romance. Because I think, honestly, some of the most romantic things in the world are actually the little, like, honestly, like Christmas, bought my partner presents. She was well happy, lovely stuff. However, in summertime, there's a shop near us that sells slushies. You know, there's like green and blue slushies.
Yeah. If I just, what does it taste of? It tastes of blue.
I mean, I love that. It's always like, yeah, what's this? Red, grey. That's full of E numbers. And yet the thing that makes me laugh is the people that are like, what's it, you know, the people that will have those slushies are equally the people that, there's going to be a Venn diagram, a crossover of people that are like, I'm not going to get the COVID vaccine because I don't want to put shit in my body. And you're like, well, actually, you just put in green slushy. But when I get Una a green slushy, she probably gets more excited about that in the height of summer than she did opening the Christmas presents. I think that is the truth of romance. It's like the surprising things that come up and sneak behind you.
No, I agree. I think that's a lot of the things that I think about, of like really lovely parts of relationships I've been in haven't necessarily been like the big movie moments. They've been the little things that are very distinctive to that person. And that then becomes like really cherished. It's like the subtlety that is, I guess, the most personal, and perhaps certain things that are like big public statements of your love. We're aware that a lot of that is about other people as well. Whereas the moments that just the two of you share, or the little in jokes, and they're really yours.
Well, I don't know if I covered this last time, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I tried to propose to my partner three times and sort of failed on every occasion. And part of the reason that I failed was because, like, it feels a bit disingenuous and a bit kind of cringe to go from the person who's like, oh, by the way, you left a sock in the whites, my shirts are buggered, to go from that to, like, going to Paris on the steps of the Champs-Élysées going like, my life changed. Because you'd be like, who's this? You don't talk like that. You don't talk in poems or rhyme. You're not Lord Byron. What the fuck are you doing? Like, it just feels very fake to do that sort of grandiose proposal, I think.
Yes. And so when you say failed, at what point did these plans fail?
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, I mean, the first one I think was the nicest. When it was her 30th, I got a plan for the rest of the day. And we talked about, you know, she was like, you know, of course, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, blah, blah, blah. And we talked about it like that.
In that exact tone.
Just in that exact tone. And then they said, Kesha, number 7, please. And we just went straight through the Tills and Tesco's. And that was about as romantic as it got. And I remember on the day of her 30th birthday, I woke up and I said, I walked in the front room and said, don't come in. And she was like, oh my goodness, this is like, you know, it's going to be so exciting. He's like got something planned. And she thought she would foil me by coming in. And she found me on bended knee. However, as I turned round, she realized that what happened is when I'd come in first time, I'd realized that the mouse that we kept on hearing had finally taken some of the bait, had died in the middle of the lounge, and I knew that she'd get really upset. So when she opened the door, she thought I was like on bended knee to propose to her, but then I'd actually got a mouse in a dustpan and brush, and she saw it and shit herself and was like, ah! So that was the first one. Because you can't let go, let's row back. By the way, I've got a ring in the cupboard. And then the second time was...
The mouse is an intruder. The mouse is not a very obscure ring, I'm telling you.
Mouse is like very, like, yeah. I know you like Ratatouille. How about it?
Put this on your finger, you can figure out how.
Oh, that's so good. And then the second time I took her to New York, and again, it's that thing of like getting down on bended knee in the middle of Central Park. I kind of thought about it, and then when we were there, it was like weird. And I said, well, I know we've talked about getting married. I didn't know if you wanted to get married. And she was like, well, yeah, we'd spoken about it. I said, yeah, let's go and get a coffee. And then like when we were getting a coffee, I was like, I've just proposed to you. And she's like, oh really, was that it? And then the third time, I think, I can't remember. Oh, it was on our anniversary. And I thought I'd be a bit quirky with it this time. And so instead of getting a wedding ring, I know that she really likes the crisp onion rings. So I bought her a pack of onion rings, got down on one knee and was like, will you marry me? Put it on her finger. And she just like ate it. And she thought that I was like just dicking about. She didn't realize I was being serious. So I've tried and failed three times is basically what I'm saying.
If I may be permitted an observation,
yeah.
I don't know if I would have known any of these things were proposals.
I think it's just so weird and disingenuous, because I love our relationship and I love the sort of relationship that we have. Like, it's very much not, it's not earnest. It's not poetic. It's not even, you know, sort of romantic in your typical sense. I think, like, you know, I'm very lucky that she's like my best mate and we have a brilliant laugh and I am really still really attracted to her and all of that. But I don't know. I always used to think when I was a kid that, you know, those grand gestures of love are, you know, sort of so important. But I think as I get older, I realize that's for TV, films, or other people. And actually in real life, it feels a bit weird trying to do those things.
Yeah. And this is something that I think really fascinates me, the kind of boundaries between, like, what is a relationship and what is other kind of dynamics. And I think there's a lot talked about, like, where the boundaries are getting into it. But what is perhaps under talked about is, like, how those differences still exist once you're in it, right? So there's all this pressure about, like, okay, when do you know that you're in a relationship? When is it official? Are you exclusive? What, you know, how long have you been together? There's all these kind of caveats to, like, how relationshiped are you? And then are you married? And then actually when you get into it, I think there's also elements of that, because there are parts of the relationship that feel very, like, homely and kind of almost like family in a way that can be quite unsexy. So, like, what's great in a relationship? Things like, if you're feeling unwell, that person looks after you. They, like, tuck you into bed. They bring you a hot water bottle. They do things that are, like, very protective that, you know, you probably are used to just doing with family members. And so you want to lean into that, but you're also trying to be this, like, sexy, independent person who's attractive, you know, at any point. And, you know, it's these kind of dichotomies of, like, okay, even once you're in it, you've still got to find, like, where are the boundaries? What parts of me am I your boyfriend? What parts am I, yeah, your chosen family? What parts are, like, am I a mate that you just have a laugh with?
You know what, I think you're absolutely right, because it's the little things. It's not the grand gestures of love. It's not spelling your spouse's name in rose petals that is the thing that really, like, kicks you in the gut romantically. I think the big things are, like, sharing a box set together, you know, rushing home in order to watch that next series of Big Mouth or something like that, or you know, splitting the car insurance, or the big one that I think is a real, like, wow, was putting her name as my next of kin. Those are, like, the little things, but they'd never make it into a movie, because that'd be a terrible movie. It was just someone, like, filling out paperwork. You know, that's why you're never going to have it. But I think those are the things that mean the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's so much of that stuff to explore when you're living together as well, because that's something I have less experience of than you. And so having lived together and also experienced lockdowns together, what kind of things have you learned? What challenges have been found?
I think lockdown was a real challenge. And the one thing that I found was really interesting, that I, you know, sort of said to mates of mine who were in a relationship, like, yeah, we really struggled. There were some really tough days and like that. And it was almost like people were, like, going, like, God, can we say this? And they were like, it's kind of this inference of, like, Jesus, do you need to talk to someone? Do you need somewhere to stay? You're like, no, I'm just being honest. So lockdown over COVID was incredibly, incredibly difficult, because we didn't really see anyone else. And I think I'm a huge believer that familiarity breeds contempt. And I think we got very contemptuous with each other. So there is that. But I also think we're at an odd age now where friends are getting married, friends are having kids, friends are buying houses. And there really is that competitive drive to grow up. And you know what, marriage, I'm okay, you know, not having, that's fine. Kids, I think I can't remember who it is, but there's a great quote that most couples only have kids just to have something to talk about anyway, which I think is brilliant. But oddly, getting a house, that's the one that kind of, like, because I'm never going to be...
That's not harsh, but what I relayed earlier was harsh about relationships being work. And you're just there being like, no, people, they only have kids for something to talk about.
I can't remember who said that. And I was like, that is such a brilliant quote.
I think we have such an ability to like subtly out-cynic each other. Doesn't take much.
Yeah. I think it would just, if you could just put some like sad cello music underneath this, it would take on a whole different vibe. It would be like, so people will go like, did people check in on him after that podcast? No, I kind of feel that like love is big, brash and showy, but actually like being together, a relationship, something that is sustainable, it's actually quite mundane. Really, like being in a sort of, you know, yeah, 6-year relationship, it's brilliant and it's amazing. But it's not amazing. It's like, I hate to say this, God, this is talking about cynical. It's like a job, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like you get your dream job and people update their LinkedIn and they go for drinks and it's all brilliant. But like the best jobs are the jobs that people stick at. And you're kind of like, how's the job going? Yes, you know, sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse, it's all right. And that's the sort of job that you'll have longevity at. But the jobs where people are like, oh my God, it's incredible, or, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world, those are the ones that aren't long-term sustainable.
Yeah, and in the way that I would phrase it, that might be a little bit more flattering when Una hears this, I would say that it's that very human experience of you finding joy in the comfort and the consistency of a relationship. Yeah. That really, we're all out here finding safety. We're trying to find a home to call our own and fill it with other people, much like, you know, we grew up with in the, you know, with our parents. And so we want a certain amount of consistency. We want a certain amount of safety. And that's kind of what I was referencing earlier, where you can like really lean into that. And sometimes it can feel like there are days where you've leaned into it too much and you're like, is this person my partner or are we housemates? Or why do they feel like my sibling today? You know, so there's that kind of push and pull of like, you want to feel really safe and comfortable. And part of that does come with like the beauty in monotony. And that absolutely it can be so exciting to be in a new relationship. And there are definitely things that you need to do to maintain an existing relationship to still keep the fire there. But you do not want fire all the time because that's stressful. Like a lot of the butterfly feelings we have around dating are anxiety. And that's why when I often talk to people in relationships on this show, they tell me right to my face, they don't want to go back to dating. And they look me in the eye as someone who's out there doing that. And they're like, no, I would never. I would not go back. I would sooner die. And I'm like, thank you.
That is rough. I mean, I don't know. I think there's a lot said about the other side of like that idea of like, you know, you'll never have that first kiss. But I always said this about relationships anyway. For me, the big things in dating weren't the first time you slept together, weren't even necessarily the first date, but it was that first time that you held hands, like that first time that you like and then they squeezed back, you're like, ooh, like that was always the most exciting to me. So maybe what we're saying is I'm just quite a mundane person and I enjoy mundanity, and whom is my pension plan.
Cool. No, I like that. I mean, I have a high tolerance for turbulence, and doesn't make for a less complicated life as interesting as people might find my work, my varied job history. So no, absolutely, I celebrate that, and I think that we are all looking for elements of consistency. Like we need to have that in order to shine. You know, like I can deal with a lot of like turbulence of like being self-employed, for example. But you know what I do need? To be able to pay my rent and to have a place that I'm glad I'm paying rent for. That's pretty vital for my mental health, to make sure everything else can be achieved. You know?
That is a lovely way of seeing it. I think it's almost like, yeah, like for me, I suppose, I think it's arbitrary to talk about being in a relationship. Because if you could just be in a relationship with everyone, it doesn't mean that you're happy, it doesn't mean you're fulfilled, and it doesn't mean that you can flourish. But I think being with my specific partner isn't like I've won the game. It's like I've got to level up.
Yeah, maybe that's the takeaway. We all date Una.
I mean, that our flat's very small, and I don't know if we could accommodate that. But I think we need to be more Una. I think that is basically, I think, the take home. Because I'm terrible. I'm an awful partner. God, I'm awful. So be less Dave, be more Una.
Does she ever, I don't actually know what she does for work or anything. Does she ever do stuff public facing? Would she come on the pod?
You know what? Like, I think we're yin and yang on that. That's very sweet. I will ask her. I would be very surprised. She's incredibly shy and she works in mental health. She's got to get stuff like signed off and whatnot. But I will definitely ask her. But yeah, she's funnier than me. She is more like, she's up for more stuff than me. But then she's public facing wise. She's a lot more shy, I think, and things like that.
Interesting. Well, you're selling her very well. So you let me know and get back to me.
I will.
That will define whether or not this bit makes the edit. And so to start wrapping up and lift a little bit back out of our variable cynicism, what do you have as a potential rule of the game? Something you'd recommend to live by in dating or relationships? Can I remember what you said last time? No, I cannot. So we'll see if it's the same one.
A rule of the game. I think if we're talking this time, long-term relationships, I would say what is very helpful for me is to have your jobs. I think I really think that's great in terms of like day to day. I do the bins, I do the floors and the cleaning. Una does a lot of the shopping and stuff. It is that thing of like familiarity, and it actually makes those things, it genuinely lifts those things because you're like, I'm not doing this for me, I'm doing this for us. But I'm also very aware that makes me sound like some sort of 1950s husband that's like, get back in the kitchen and cook my tea. That's not what I'm saying. These are chosen jobs, but I think having little roles in a relationship can help them flow.
Yes, you are saying do it for the union. Just in a less aggressive yes. way. Yeah, I love that. And I think I'm going to add one that's kind of similar then, because I think one of the things we can all do with practicing at times is looking for the things that do feel a little bit more mundane, that we are not as encouraged to get excited about in relationships, and think, what kind of things are you looking for there? Because I think by the time we reach adulthood, all of us are pretty packed with movie tropes and song lyrics and Valentine's marketing campaigns and plenty of things for us to like let our head go away with the clouds about daydreaming about certain things. And actually often what's underrepresented is like, what kind of practical things do you want in a relationship? And what kind of like day-to-day, you know, boundaries and ambitions do you have out of that? So like one of the ones we talked about, Danielle and I, a few times on the show is like, we're not sure if we're best suited to living with a partner full time. We're like, yeah, that works for us. We love to see them. We just find that living together can be like layers of complication that aren't quite for us. And I think those are the stuff where you really learn about what works for you rather than trying to fit yourself into a Love Actually shaped box.
Absolutely. And you know absolutely. What? Like most of those characters, you know what? Love like Actually anyway, will be assholes in real life anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's the weird thing though. Whenever you look at all of those rom-coms and stuff, it might be funny for like 2 hours, but then you actually think of the implications and stuff. And you're absolutely right that it is celebrating the mundane, the little things, whether it's writing a letter or whether it's buying a slushie. I think those are really important things.
Yeah, I think let's rebrand it. Rather than mundane, how about we go with simple pleasures?
Oh, we love that. It also small sounds jokes. Like a yeah that so simple pleasures does sound like a sex shop, but yeah, I think small joys, that's great.
Small choice. Fine. On that note of your upcoming sex toy line, we will wrap up there. Right. Thank you so much. If people want to find you online, go see your face and hear you say more words.
If they want to see my face saying words, you could go to davechorner.co.uk and you can find my face doing words.
What are you doing to them? Did they consent?
I'm not allowed to say unless you're over 18, but it involves handcuffs, a radiator, and a lot of gaffer tape.
There we go.
I don't know what that means. I started saying words and I was like, none of this makes any sense.
Well, I love that for you. We've got like 2 weeks until this episode goes out. So get updating your website, mate. You've got some vague threats to deliver on.
Oh, great.
All right.
That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.